This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran arrests several people involved in last week's terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz that left more than a dozen people dead. Ukraine suffers blackouts while water supplies are cut for 80% of residents in Kiev following Russia's missile attacks on energy facilities. And the death toll from the collapse of a suspension bridge in western India has risen to 137. Authorities have arrested several people. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Safi. Good to have you with us. I'll begin with our top story. Iran's top intelligence apparatus has arrested the second person involved in the recent terrorist attack on a holy shrine in the south-central city of Shiraz. Intelligence Minister Ismail Khatib says the suspect was detained thanks to a tip-off by members of the public. Intelligence Ministry says that besides the second accomplice, six other people have been taken into custody for their role in the terrorist attack. On Wednesday, an armed man went on a shooting rampage at the Shah Charak Holy Shrine, a famous pilgrimage site in Iran. The attack, claimed by Daesh, left 13 people, including two children, dead and dozens more injured. Now, Tehran warning the European Union of reciprocal action if the bloc continues with unconstructive approach and imposes new sanctions on Iran over the recent riots in the country. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani slammed the stance adopted by the EU and the West on the recent riots in Iran as meddlesome, irresponsible, and hypocritical. Kanani says that European officials claim to be supporting women's rights while they back indiscriminate sanctions of the U.S. against Iran that also target women. The spokesman said that this stance helped prepare the ground for riots and chaos in Iran. Kanani also urged the European Union not to tie its interests to those of the U.S. and warned of the damage that the bloc's confrontational policies will inflict on its interests. The Daesh terrorist attack on worshippers in Shiraz has drawn reactions in Afghanistan, where a deadly attack on an education center in Kabul is still fresh in minds. Afghans express sympathy with Iranians, stressing the need for Islamic unity in the face of terrorism. We have a report from Kabul.
Wednesday's terror attack on Shah Charak Holy Shrine in Iran's city of Shiraz has saddened Iranians as well as many people around the globe. Among them, Afghans who have been bearing the brunt of blind terror attacks for years say the attack opened their old wounds. They say the tragic terror attack touched their hearts, and they share the grief of Iranian people.
I express my condolences to all Iranians, particularly those who live in Shiraz, for their losses in the terrorist attack on Shah Charak Shrine. I was shocked and saddened that innocent worshippers were killed there. I also express my sympathy with families of victims. Iran has not been only our neighboring country and a friend of Afghanistan, but also a second home for we Afghans.
Indeed, it was a horrific and exhausting attack. We strongly condemn it. We Afghans can feel how terrifying such attacks can be. Of course, the attack on innocent people saddened all informed and civilized people. I hope the perpetrators and organizers of the attack are brought to justice and punished.
Afghan experts and activists stress the need for global unity, especially among Muslims, against terror acts. They believe the enemies of Islam and Muslims try to destabilize the region by sowing discord among its inhabitants.
The important point about the terror attack in Iran is that some countries who claim to be superpowers, and we know them as arrogant, try to protect their hegemony in any way possible. One of their evil deeds has been plotting religious wars. In my opinion, the Shiraz attack was one of such conspiracies. I believe the Iranian people and all Muslims should be vigilant and informed, especially in the current situation.
At least 13 people, including two children, were killed after a gunman opened fire on pilgrims at the Holy Shrine in Shiraz. Dozens of others were also wounded. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility for the attack. Many Afghans consider Iran as their second home. Today, people here express sympathy for Iranians, saying they stand with the neighboring nation of Iran. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The Russian army says it's targeted military and energy infrastructure in new strikes on Ukraine using long-range weapons.
The Russian armed forces continue the strikes with high-precision long-range air and sea-based weapons against the military command and energy systems of Ukraine. The strike targets were achieved. All assigned objects have been hit.
Ukraine officials have acknowledged that more than 50 cruise missiles were fired into the country, causing blackouts and cutting out water supplies in some areas. The strikes rocked different cities, including capital Kyiv. The mayor there says the blitz has left 80% of residents without water and hundreds of thousands of homes without power. No word on casualties. Russia has stepped up missile attacks on Ukraine since an explosion on a Crimea bridge earlier this month. Moscow blames Kyiv for what it calls the terrorist attack. Meanwhile, Moscow calling the continuation of Ukraine's grain export via the Black Sea risky and dangerous, that after Moscow pulled out of a UN brokered deal that allowed the Ukrainian shipments.
In conditions when Russia is talking about the impossibility of guaranteeing the safety of the shipping in these areas, such a deal is hardly feasible, and it takes on a different character, much more risky, dangerous, and unguaranteed.
Peskov's comments came as 12 ships carrying grain left Ukrainian ports on Monday. It remains unclear if the shipments will be allowed to reach their destinations. On Saturday, Russia said it was suspending participation in the July deal after a Ukrainian drone allegedly targeted Russia's Black Sea fleet. The move has, however, sparked an outcry from Ukraine and its Western allies. The U.S. has called it purely outrageous. The EU and the NATO have asked Russia to reverse the decision. The Western Military Alliance also urged Russia to stop, quote, weaponizing food. Time now for the news review section. Now, Eurozone inflation soaring again to hit a record high this month, that amid growing fears of recession and energy crisis fueled by the war in Ukraine. According to data from Eurostat, consumer prices jumped by nearly 1% to 10.7% in October. That's driven by the rise in energy and food prices. The European Central Bank has been increasing rates to offset the soaring inflation, but a policy has failed to curb the surge in recent months. And that amid fears that a monetary policy would force the Eurozone economy into recession. Now, to get some insight on this, I'm inviting a couple of guests. Our correspondent, Jerome Hughes, is joining me from Brussels. Also with us is Greg Simons, who's a researcher with the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies in Uppsala, Sweden. Now, Jerome, pretty bad situation there in terms of economy. Tell us what measure is the EU taking, the central bank, as I just said, it's not been able to stop this soaring inflation. So what's going to happen next?
That's right. Well, the efforts by the European Central Bank, there's no doubt they have failed. And you have business and consumer confidence is going rock bottom. More economists that you speak to are saying that we are heading for a deep recession because if they can't bring down inflation, if they can't bring it down inflation by raising interest rates, then what more can they do? And secondly, it's just growing pressure on ordinary households because the cost of living isn't coming down, and yet their rents are going up when landlords pass on interest rate hikes to their mortgages. And people who have their own mortgage, of course, it's going up every month. They've raised interest rates now at their last three meetings, the ECB, by 2%, which is an enormous hike. 0.75% was the last rise. They're meeting again on the 15th of December to increase rates again. But really, with the demand on energy, the main thing driving inflation is energy and the sanctions against Russia, trying to cut Russia off. And with demand for energy set to go up during the winter months, we're set to see inflation keep going up as well. And how are unions? A couple of days ago, I was speaking to your colleague Bardia, talking about the fact that, you know, Unions will be coming out and will be calling for strikes because wages are not keeping up with inflation. Mm. Well, since then, for example, here in Belgium, the police have agreed to go on strike, one-day strike action on the 9th of November in 10 days' time. All police stations will be closed. And the firefighters here in Belgium are going on strike in December. We don't know the date yet. And, you know, we've seen strikes here in terms of anti-austerity strikes and protests where you had more than 100,000 workers on the streets.
Now, Greg, as Jerome put it rightly, you know, Europe is grappling with a plethora of issues, and that has been there even before the Ukraine war. Now, how, to what extent, let's say, is this Ukraine war contributing to the further worsening of the EU in terms of economy?
Well, I mean, you have the convergences of two man-made stupidities, essentially. Everyone seems to focus on the Ukraine war and how that contributes. But few remember that this already began before the war. And what was beginning before the war was this adherence to this green ideology that is reducing fuels and sources of energy, traditional ones, for so-called green energy, but not having the capacity to keep the supply for the demand, which is necessary. So this was already beginning before the war, and that was owing to the ideology. But if we look at what's happening now, it's because Europe isn't acting like a sovereign political entity. They're doing the US bidding. They're engaging as objects in the United States' economic war. I mean, currently against Russia, and possibly soon they're going to join in on China as well, which is just going to exacerbate things even more.
Okay. And Greg, you know, in the middle of all these strikes, industrial action, and, you know, protest rallies that are being held in different parts of Europe, the cost of living crisis in the UK, problems in France and Belgium, elsewhere in Europe, is there a way out of this? And this war is also going on, and the winter is approaching, energy prices are going higher. So what's the way out of this?
Ultimately, the way out, which is not realistic, considering who is so-called political leadership of Europe at the moment, but the way out of it would be to act in one's own national interests and not to do Washington's bidding in these economic wars, mm-hmm. because they're absolutely against national interest. And I mean, this has been proven, and it's going to be proven even more concretely. I mean, as your other speaker said, I mean, winter is coming up. It's been mild so far, but it's not going to get any better. And if they join in on China, then there's not going to be much left of European economies.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Jerome Hughes in Brussels, Greg Simons in Uppsala. Welcome back. Let's move on with the rest of this newscast. China urging the United States to stop its attempts to contain and suppress Beijing and avoid creating obstacles to bilateral ties. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi made the comment in a telephone call with his U.S. counterpart, Antony Blinken. He also called on Washington not to let itself be blinded by ideological bias while dealing with China. According to a statement by the U.S. State Department, Blinken and Wang also discussed the need to responsibly manage U.S.-China relations. The world's two top economies have recently struck a more conciliatory tone toward each other. Days ago, U.S. President Biden said his country does not see conflict with China. China's President Xi Jinping said that Beijing is willing to work with Washington to find ways to get along to the benefit of both and for the sake of global peace. Now, deaths toll from the collapse of a pedestrian suspension bridge in western India has risen to 137. The Indian Prime Minister has expressed sadness over the tragedy in his home state and says that rescue operations are going on.
Condolences to the families of the people who have lost their lives in this accident. In this hour of grief, the government is with the bereaved families in every manner. The Gujarat government has been carrying out the rescue operations with all its might since last evening.
Now, many of those who died were women and children elderly. The death toll is expected to rise as rescuers are combing through the river to find those missing. More than 177 people have been rescued. Police say that 9 people associated with the company that maintained the bridge have been arrested. Hundreds of people were on the bridge when it collapsed on Sunday. It was overcrowded as people had gone there to celebrate Diwali or the Festival of Light. The structure had only reopened to the public last week after undergoing renovation. It was originally built during British rule in the 19th century. All right, let's from New Delhi bring in Munawwar Zaman, our correspondent. And Munawwar, do you have an update regarding the casualties? And the bridge was just open for a week. Can it just collapse? What kind of maintenance work was done on it?
Well, these are the things that happen in this part of the world. When a contract is taken by the contractor, they usually subcontract to a smaller company. Oh, well, this project was open on 26th October. It was thrown public for going for picnic and enjoying themselves, where festival season was there in Gujarat. And of course, it was a Gujarat New Year. They were celebrating the Festival of Lights and one more festival called Chhath Puja, that is the Festival of Sun. So all they gathered, but the tragedy is that this bridge never got a clearance certificate that this bridge is ready for public. And what is most amazing and sometimes traumatic is that 500 people were gathered all together, and there was no crowd control. There was nobody to manage the crowd. And the tickets were sold to 12 rupees and 17 rupees. And the biggest tragedy of this incident is most of them were young children and women in particular, and the 2-year-old child. So it is a very tragic incident. Still, they are conducting the cleanup operations, and they have rescued some 180 people. And the rescue operation is still going on. And the NDRF team, the disaster management team, they're all coordinating with each other, trying to find out if more bodies will be recovered. And of course, it is expected that more people are still missing, and the death toll could probably mount.
Okay, thank you for that. Munawwar Zaman, our correspondent in New Delhi. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic Divide.
France saw one of the biggest protests of the year, where over 100,000 protesters came out to protest inflation and the cost of living. This came on the back of petrol stations that had ran dry on petrol. Even though the situation may have been eased for now, the demands of the protesters are still out there, unanswered when it comes to things like higher salaries. But the size of the protest has been said to be maybe a spark for other European countries to come out and protest strike action. Hi, I'm Kavitan Wei. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, large-scale protests. Energy costs is one of the reasons for that. That happened in France. And the lack of fuel at the pumps was something that affected the economy. How bad is the French economy? Well, when it comes to the economy, you're looking at pay rises not keeping up with inflation. That's something that Macron has to deal with. Also something that plagues many European countries, the cost of living overall. Then comes the 2023 budget. Why did Macron have to ram that through? That's the key question. And then we will take a look at the economic crisis gripping Europe. Inflation, you heard that before. Energy prices, plus a harsh winter coming up. How is Europe going to cope?
As the war in Ukraine continues to drag on, the economic crisis triggered by the war has pushed citizens in different countries to stage protests against rising costs of living across the continent. In France, people have marched in the cities across the country to protest against the cost of living crisis, fueled by soaring inflation. Police have clashed with the protesters, venting anger in the capital, Paris. Protesters are demanding pay hikes to cope with rising prices of essential commodities. In Germany, pilots of Lufthansa's Eurowings began a three-day strike, affecting tens of thousands of the budget airline's passengers. Various strikes and industrial actions are set to take place in other European nations against the worsening economic conditions across the continent. Anti-NATO sentiment is also running high. The Ukraine war has caused a severe energy crisis in Europe, triggering anti-NATO sentiments among Europeans.
In terms of the online post for this topic, which involves France and other European countries, there is no denying the fact that people are angry and worried about how their lives are going to be, especially with winter coming up. So let's start with France and then move into the wider European area. This particular post is one online which said France aims to shield bigger companies as recession fears are deepening in Europe, in which the ECB, the European Central Bank president, acknowledged growth will slow substantially as Paris promises additional aid for energy bills. He said he would push to double the state aid available for industrial companies and other medium-sized businesses who are struggling with energy bills to up to 100 million euros, adding the measure requires sign-off from Brussels, but a 3 billion pot already earmarked for helping companies will actually be rolled into the year 2023. Now, Macron has accused the U.S. of trade double standards is one thing we figured we should look at, coming amid energy crunch, where the French president slammed U.S. trade and energy policies for creating a double standard with Europe as resentment builds over the economic price that the continent is paying over the conflict in Ukraine. The North American economy is making choices for the sake of attractiveness, which Macron said, I respect, but they create a double standard with lower energy prices domestically while selling natural gas to Europe at record prices. Severe economic slowdown awaits Europe as energy crunch bites is our next post. The Eurozone faces the largest downward revision in the world, with overall growth expected at 0.3%, as opposed to the 1.6% forecast in June. The OECD also anticipates Europe's largest economy, Germany, to suffer a recession in the year 2023. Next, EU inflation smashes historic high. Surging food and energy costs have continued to drive prices higher across the bloc, in terms of the data that was a study for this. It said price growth in the EU surged to 10.9% year-on-year in September, marking a new record high across the 27-member bloc, adding the annual inflation rate in the Eurozone, a subset of the EU comprising of the members, the 19 members that use the euro as their currency, increased to 9.9% in September. That's a jump from August's 9.1% and last year's 3.4%. So there you have it. You can see that the sentiment is not that high when it comes to what is happening across Europe, not only France, but other European countries. Let me bring in our guest for the first segment of our Q&A, Pierre-Emmanuel Thamen, who's a geopolitical analyst, joins us. Pierre-Emmanuel Thamen, welcome to Economic Divide. We've had these strikes that were held in France, really big strikes, over 100,000 showed up. Obviously, in terms of inflation and the cost of living, that's the number one worries that they have on their mind, causing headaches for millions, the petrol shortage that occurred. How bad is the French economy doing since these strikes were so massive in numbers?
I think there are many different factors, but of course, the crisis in Ukraine and the decision to not to import or to reduce imports from Russia is in terms of petrol and gas is having a huge impact on the economy everywhere in Europe, but also there are internal decisions made by the French government which led to this situation. So this is a combination of factors. In France, you have a tradition of strikes. And when workers are unhappy, they strike. They go to strike because the unions are very weak, and the only solution to obtain some concession for the salaries and social conditions is to go to the street.
Oh, that explains why the French like to strike. Okay, that was our guest, Pierre Manuel. Let's bring in Clive Menzies. Clive Menzies is a political economic researcher and analyst who joins us from London. Clive Menzies, welcome to Economic Divide. You have these protests against the rising costs of living that's happening, basically emanating from the energy crisis that has translated into inflation. Many are angry about the government's waging a war at the same time that this is going on, because they feel like the U.S. is in the lead, leading them down, especially when it comes to sanctioning Russia, obviously. When will European politicians come to their senses and say enough is enough, especially when it comes to the Ukraine conflict?
Well, I think what people are beginning to realize in growing numbers is that their governments have been lying to them for a long time about many things, not least the causes of energy price rises and cost of living rises. What we're looking at in Ukraine is an existential war for Russia, but it is NATO that is actually waging this war using the proxy of the Ukraine. And the people that are suffering, apart from people across Europe because of the sanctions, are the Ukrainians themselves, who are being used as pawns in this proxy war by NATO.
It is time now for the InfoNews section of the program. The first item that we looked at relates to the country of Sri Lanka. Now, if you think that inflation is bad in other countries in the world, look at Sri Lanka's economy, what it's suffering from in terms of inflation, hitting a record 73.7%. That's right. Well, the central bank of that country has said that inflation in the island nation is peaking, but price rise is likely to ease this month. So that's somewhat of good news for that country. Next up, taking a look at an issue that's been plaguing this Ukraine conflict in terms of the efforts by the West, and that's a price cap, where that's still in the works, or not, because in this case it hasn't worked. EU has failed to agree on cap on gas prices after their 11-hour summit. At least 15 EU countries want a cap on surging prices amid public anger over the cost of living. But Germany is resistant on that, so that raised a question mark there as to why Germany is resisting that. That's a good topic to dive into. Next up, taking a look at the supply of gasoline in the U.S. Well, not that they have a lot. I mean, they do, but they're plowing through the reserves. The U.S. president has released another 15 million barrels of oil from their strategic reserve just weeks before the U.S. midterms. Explains why he did it. He has moved, this move that he has done completes a previously announced release of, guess what, 180 million barrels. Of course, this comes amid the Ukraine conflict. And in line with that news somewhat is the recession that is or is not occurring in the U.S. Some say it is, some say it isn't. Well, Jeff Bezos, I'm sure you've heard of him, has issued a dire warning for the U.S. economy. He said that Americans should brace for a painful downturn. Surging inflation is causing too much pain, and according to him, that is due to the fact that the U.S. is going to be suffering from a severe recession. Those were the topics we picked for this section.
You're listening to Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for the in-depth section of this program. Well, the economic situation in France has been said to be better than other European countries, but is that really the case? If it was, then why would tens of thousands pour into the streets demanding higher wages, for example, and protest their cost of living? Well, let's find out why that is. France's proposed budget for the fiscal year 2023. looking at this as it keeps going, 305.5 billion euros. Yes, that figure was proposed. France's finance minister said the fight against inflation is the biggest priority. Now, the big question is, will that figure actually be constructive in that regards? What about spending? Well, we think that should be the biggest concern, not just inflation. For example, when it comes to state subsidies, France spends 45 billion euros on state subsidies. The explanation that it gives to keep energy costs down, that's how much money they spend on that. Just one of the things that they spend a lot of money on in terms of the budget. Moving on, this is why we think France needs to actually check on its spending. The debt-to-GDP ratio of France is one of the highest in the Eurozone. It comes in at 113.3%. Now, we want to put that next to two other factors here. The amount that it borrowed, for example, in the year 2021-22, 260 billion euros. Then we move on to a figure to overcome the budget deficit that it has. And that figure is 270 billion euros. Do you see anything wrong there? The amount needed to overcome the deficit is higher than the amount borrowed, 270 billion euros. So where will France get the money to actually spend on this? Well, let's move on and see what other factors are important when it comes to the French economy. The growth forecast is important. Now, these numbers are sure to shock you, given the little amount that it actually appears that it is forecasting. I mean, 1% is what France has proposed, France meaning the administration of Macron and their finance department. But the Bank of France has said, you know what, 1% is even too much. It has proposed 0.8%, which is a more realistic projection based on what they have said. Of course, that translates to a lot of money, but still, it's very little compared to the fact that France is one of the biggest economies in the top three of the Eurozone. Next sector of the economy that needs a focus on is pensions. And herein lies a problem for Macron and also previous administrations. When it comes to deficit reduction, this cannot be achieved without pension reform. That's the bottom line on pensions. And the problem that France has, well, you can see 14% of that, of GDP, that is spent on public pensions. That's a lot, because when you take a look at the OECD average, it's only 8%. So obviously, there is a big problem for France to try to reform that. And finally, when it came to the budget, President Emmanuel Macron's government had to ram its 2023 budget through Parliament. What does that mean? That means it had to do that without a vote, after battling in vain for it to get approved by the fractured lower house of Parliament. That's right. He had to push that through. The loss of his overall majority is the reason for that. That happened in June on the legislative polls, which meant he could not get enough deputies to actually approve the package. Understandably, the opposition was not too happy. Okay, let's bring in, let's bring back Pierre-Emmanuel Thomann, geopolitical analyst, who rejoins us. Pierre-Emmanuel, welcome back. At the same time that Europe is facing a rising populism, you got sanctions against Russia, obviously to have hurt the livelihoods there in Europe. The public demand for livelihoods will be used by far-right parties, as they have been, in terms of thrusting them into power. Don't you think that that's going to pose a threat to the overall European political system?
I think we are already in a systemic crisis. But for many years, this was the case, and it's increasing more and more and accelerates with this Ukraine crisis. Because within the European Union, actually, there are many disagreements between EU member states, more and more, and they are more and more fragmented. And this is why they want so much to appear united, although they are not, and they view the European project in different ways. And first of all, the systemic crisis of the European project, for example, is totally related with a systemic crisis in international relations of a global world order. More and more, there is a multipolarity which is emerging, and the West is defined as the United States on these main allies within NATO, and this group of countries, or governments, I would say, because you know, the population are not that in line with the governments, is part of a systemic crisis as well, these Western countries don't accept multipolarity, and especially United States and EU and NATO, they want to reduce your acceleration of this multipolarity emerges with Russia, China, Iran, Brazil, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, having much more power on clout and refuse to align themselves on the main power, United States, which was enjoying the unipolar moment, until recently.
Okay, very well. Let me bring back Clive Menzies, political economy researcher and analyst from London, see what he thinks. Clive Menzies, along the same lines about how Europe is facing rising populism, you have these far-right parties and that are now thrust into positions. The public demand for livelihoods will be used by them to basically lead the country economically also. Wouldn't that pose a threat to the overall European political system?
Well, I think it's fair to say, to some extent, these words like populism and far right are manufactured by the media. Essentially, what we've seen over the last 120 years or so is the destruction of the nation state, or the concept of the nation state. And what people are, when people decide that their country should not be ruled by people outside the country, effectively the UN and the EU, then that is described as populism or far right, whereas in fact a more accurate characterization is people wanting to take power back in order to control their own destinies.
Europe is facing a tough economic time. Inflation in the Eurozone has reached unprecedented levels. The latest data shows that inflation rose an average to 10.9% across the European Union. In August, that figure stood at 10.1%, and the annual inflation rate in the Eurozone was 9.9% in September, a jump from 9.1% in August. In the United Kingdom, the latest figures show that inflation hit 10.1% in September. The figure matches a 40-year high that was hit in July. The rise in prices have pushed the European Commission to propose a 40 billion euro in aid to help small and medium-sized firms. High prices are also adding urgency for more rate hikes by the European Central Bank. Europe is now facing an energy crisis. According to authorities in Italy, electricity tariffs saw record growth last month, exceeding 136% on an annual basis. Rising energy costs have also pushed authorities in Germany to a 200 billion euro plan to combat the energy crisis.
We know that Europe's energy demand is very large, so it is logical that instead of outbidding each other, the member states and the energy companies should leverage their joint purchasing power. And for that, we propose today legal tools for pooling energy demand at European level.
That package includes relief measures like a gas price cap and a tax on windfall profits made by energy firms. The unprecedented crisis has now triggered concerns over the economic future of the Eurozone. It is now believed that the rising of far-right parties will cause further frictions and rivalries between EU states.
When it comes to the economies of Europe, there is a misunderstanding that their turmoil is due to the Ukraine conflict, but that is a misconception, something which we have stated before in our previous episodes. Even attributing the current European economic crisis to COVID-19 is a mistake. So then what is the problem, you ask? The answer may surprise you. EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell confessed the West's neoliberal economic model was based on cheap energy coming from Russia, access to the big China market and low-paid Chinese workers. Europe has now lost that and is thus in crisis.
So our prosperity was based on China and Russia, energy and market. You, US, takes care of our security. You, China, and Russia provide the basis of our prosperity. This is a world that is no longer there.
What Borrell, in essence, was saying that sustaining this capitalistic model was made possible through China's cheap labor and production with cheap energy coming from Russia. The West's economic prosperity following the end of the First Cold War in 1991 was built on a neoliberal capitalist economic model that was only made possible due to the extraction of wealth from China and Russia, the European Union's top foreign policy official Josep Borrell has confessed. Our prosperity was based on China and Russia energy and market, Borrell said. China provided the US and EU with a massive market, low-paid labor, and cheap consumer goods. And after the Soviet Union was overthrown, mass privatization in Russia and steps at integrating it into the West helped Europe secure huge amounts of inexpensive energy. The Ukraine conflict, however, has changed all of that. The EU's boycott of cheap Russian gas and oil have greatly increased the cost of living and doing business in Europe, making its products uncompetitive in global markets. This has plunged the capitalist system into a deep crisis, motivating the West, that is US and Europe, to wage a new Cold War on China and Moscow. The goal here would be to gain control over China's market and labor and Russia's natural resources. The EU's foreign policy chief acknowledged these facts in the 2022 Ambassadors Conference in Brussels on October 10th. They were reminiscent of comments made by French President Emmanuel Macron warning of what he called the end of a neoliberal era of abundance. It should be noted that Borrell is not too confident when it comes to the US. He said Europe's security policy was based on the United States and NATO, but the US is not a reliable security partner. He also said while Europe is no longer dependent on Russian energy, it is becoming dependent on US liquefied natural gas exports. This poses its own new security problem. He rounded off his speech by warning that the world is in chaos, and he named several main issues, like the NATO proxy war with Russia in Ukraine, the deep US-China competition, food and energy crises, and an impending economic recession. It is not just the proxy war in Ukraine that has destabilized Europe, Borrell said, but also the deep US-China competition. He acknowledged that the US government bears responsibility for the breakout of the war. That does it for this segment of the program. Hope you enjoyed it.
When it comes to Europe and its economies, the EU is really stuck between a rock and a hard place. I mean, it has shown that it is truly a vassal state of the U.S. in terms of the way that it's just following the U.S.'s lead. And this obviously is costing it dearly, from higher energy prices to, of course, inflation. Now, when it comes to France, the protests there that occurred, that should be a wake-up call for not only the French government, but all countries in Europe. If you recall, back in 2011, there was the Arab Spring. Are we witnessing a European spring now? Something to think about. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. From Mikko Vitale and the entire team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. سجن فيها بمخالفته وذاق طعم عذابها بمعصيته وحبس بين أطباقها بجرمه وجريرته وهو يضج إليك ضجيج مؤمل لرحمتك ويناديك بلسان أهل توحيدك ويتوسل إليك بربوبيتك. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, you know that we have reached this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. Imam Ali alayhi salam in this part says, Ya Mawlai, فَكَيْفَ يَبْقَى فِي الْعَذَابِ وَهُوَ يَرْجُو مَا سَلَفَ مِنْ حِلْمِكِ. My protector, so how should he remain in the chastisement while he has hope for your previous clemency? أَمْ كَيْفَ تُؤْلِمُهُ النَّارِ وَهُوَ يَأْمُلُ فَضْلَكَ وَرَحْمَتَكَ. So how should the fire cause him pain while he expects your bounty and mercy? أَمْ كَيْفَ يُحْرِقُهُ لَهِيبُهَا وَأَنْتَ تَسْمَعُ صَوْتَهُ وَتَرَى مَكَانَهُ. Or how should its flames burn him while you hear his voice and see his place? As we concluded in the previous episodes, the Quranic verses and traditions imply that Almighty Allah has mercy upon all the servants. He has put the key to salvation and treasures of his mercy in the hands of all the servants. It is accessible for everyone, but not everyone wishes to possess these keys to open the treasuries of Almighty Allah's mercy. We said that Imam Ali alayhi salam says, supplication is the key of mercy, and this important key sometimes is ignored. With reference to the verse of the Holy Quran that says, whatever mercy Allah unfolds for the people, no one can withhold it, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, the mercy implies the prayer and dua. So this verse says, whatever kind of dua Allah unfolds for the people, no one can withhold it. In other words, supplication is the key by which Allah opens the doors of His mercy for the people and which He has placed in their hands. And this is what Imam Ali alayhi salam has been trying to teach us throughout this Divine Kumail supplication and from the very beginning. We have seen two very important elements. First, the factor of hope and staying hopeful of Almighty Allah's mercy. And second, the factor of supplication, calling out to Him, turning our need to Him and no one else. In this regard, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam says, for whosoever among you the door of prayer and dua is opened, the doors of response shall also be opened for him.
My Lord, glory and praise be to you. Would you disregard the voice of a Muslim slave imprisoned in hell for his disobedience and imprisoned within its pits for his evil doings and misdeeds, crying out to you the cries of one who has faith in your mercy and calling out to you in the language of those who believe in your unity and seeking to approach you by means of your epithet.
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, dear listeners, it is Allah that opens up towards His servants with prayer. And He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is the one who opens for Him the doors of its acceptance. Imam Ali alayhi salam says elsewhere, whoever knocks at the door of Allah the Glorious, it will be opened for him. Of course, as we have said many times and emphasized on, the point is that the supplicant, the believer, must be aware of the fact that supplication, calling out to the Lord, has got some specific etiquettes, and more importantly, some specific requisites that the supplicant needs to be aware of, needs to observe them. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is narrated to have said, supplicate frequently because it is the key of every mercy and the fulfillment of every need. And that which lies with Allah cannot be attained but through prayer and dua. A door which is frequently knocked at is likely to be opened for the one who knocks it. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in this beautiful word is teaching us one of these requisites, one of these etiquettes to be more precise. Supplicate frequently. This means to be consistent in your supplication. This is what exactly going on with this person Imam Ali alayhi salam is describing in this part of the Kumaya supplication. وَأَنْتَ تَسْمَعُ صَوْتَهُ وَتَرَى مَكَانَهُ. The person is still hopeful, is still continuing. أَمْ كَيْفَ يَشْتَمِلُ عَلَيْهِ زَفِيرُهَا وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ زَعْفَهُ. Or, وَهُوَ يَرْجُ مَا سَلَفَ مِنْ حِلْمِكَ. He is still hopeful of your previous clemency. وَهُوَ يَأْمُلُ فَضْلَكَ وَرَحْمَتَكَ. He still expects your bounty and mercy because you have shown, you have proved that you have this vast ocean of mercy. Imam Ali alayhi salam says elsewhere, prayer and dua is the key of fulfillment and the key of success, and the best prayer that which emanates from a pure breast and a pious heart. Let us end our episode with a tradition from the Holy Prophet ﷺ that once said to the companions, shall I show you a weapon that will deliver you from your enemies and increase in your provision? The companion said, indeed, Ya Rasulullah. And he said, supplicate your Lord day and night, because the weapon of a believer is supplication. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. We ask the Almighty Allah to sit us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.